Okay, what I wanted to talk to you about is, first, your early years when you came on the department.
Mm-hmm.
When you, Fifteen Other Blacks, were first hired, was there segregation in the firehouse itself, in this firehouse?
Yes, to a certain extent. This being a special case, I would say probably 16 was put at Station 16,
yeah,
which at that time was located on Marietta.
Okay.
Up here at Marietta High, right above Northside Drive. Mm-hmm. And a month later, that was April 1st when we went over there. And then May 1st, we moved over here to the new station.
Okay. Was this built especially to house an integrated unit?
It sure was. Mm-hmm.
And how was it built? Any different, let's say?
Well, just little subtle things like this room at that particular time was used for the captain and the truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the guy that drives the captain on this piece of equipment. And the front room up there on the other side was used for a lieutenant and his driver.
Mm-hmm.
And all the blacks was located in the bunk room on the after side of the left side.
Did you have different duties at first when you first came on?
Well, we always hired as firemen, okay? Yeah. No problem with that, because all of them were black. So the job that we performed would be with black.
Okay, the jobs you performed weren't with the whites?
And not per se. Now, when we go out to an alarm out there, yeah, which you would run into other companies, most of them would just stand around and watch you work. We know we had to fight the fire by ourselves.
Well, I was curious about that. I came across a newspaper article a few years ago that you mentioned that other white companies would just quit fighting fires when we got there and let us do the job.
Right.
Now,
why? No, why was it allowed?
Well, okay, let's hear that. Why was it allowed? Yeah.
Well, the only reason I could say is because it was a belief of the administration at that particular time, not so much in the city government, but the chief of the department, which was C.H.M. LeBrun. He stood in front of us, our graduating class, and we went to school in 1962 in August. He stood in front of the class, and he made it known to us, you know, in his own words. And how did he put it? He say, don't misunderstand me. He said, the reason you're here is political pressure. And say, it's my impression that you can't make a fireman out of a Negro. He didn't say a Negro, no, he said a Negro.
Okay.
You know, one of those slick type way of saying it. And so if you got that kind of feeling coming from the top,
yeah,
then there's no problem with anybody doing anything they want to you.
Yeah.
And I don't know about the rest of the fellas, because it was never really discussed between the guys that I know of. At least I never was in on any conversation. I just made up my mind at that particular point. It wasn't anything they could do to me. It wasn't, you know, I was going to be here.
So when you got to a fire, I was in the 16 black firemen got to a fire. You worked as a unit?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, see, now we had two shifts, so that would have been split up. There had been eight on each shift.
Yeah. Okay, so let's say when you got to a fire, then would the white firemen back you up at all? Even your own, and have the people in the station, they back
up. Now, those people were specialized. They were drivers and officers.
Yeah.
So therefore, you know, that job was the drivers there, and the captain was the director from the outside, or whatever the case may be.
Okay, but actually going into the building and doing the job.
Now, we had a couple here that would do.
Yeah.
But not too many. They didn't want, they didn't have to, we'll put it that way.
How about when other companies got there, I
think. Oh boy, the other companies, they just did it back off completely, because see, feeling was that we weren't going to last long.
Okay.
See, and to make that happen is to leave us out there by ourselves. See, and it felt like, but you can imagine, you got 16 guys coming off the street, they're going to school for 3 weeks at night while you work your other job.
Yeah.
And then we went to school in 62 and then come home to April 63, so the things that we learned in school we had just about forgotten. So they felt like, hey, they're not going to be able to hold up under the pressure. But we had what I consider pretty good officers here stationed.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I know they were doing it for themselves, you know, because see, I'm sure that all of them was promising anything, because one of our captain, he was our instructor in class as a lieutenant when we were prepared. When it came on, they made him captain, so you'd be, didn't nobody want to be captain at Station 16 with all of that. So he took it. He was a driver for the chief. He took it also. He was put up from lieutenant to captain. Okay, those two captains we had. They had a lieutenant and a driver. Mm-hmm. The way they're working, you know, some of them off at this time, some of them off at that time.
Yeah.
But anyway, I felt like they were pretty good, because we would come in the morning and you were working on the Ouija board. It would go 4 days in the daytime, it would be off 2 days, and go 4 nights, you know, like that. Anyway, they would come in the morning, we were working day shift, and we would work approximately to 12 o'clock, you know, cleaning up the station, providing we didn't get an alarm during that time. And then we would sit down in class, you know, firefighting techniques and things like that. And we would stay in class until we got up at 4 o'clock. We stay in class at 4 o'clock. And then the other shift come in and they eat the dinner and everything. And at 6 o'clock we go in class again and then get out to 10. But the most amazing thing to me is we had been on for about, well, the following year they came around with what they call grading the cities by the underwriters.
Yeah.
And they come out, well, you know, it's based, it was at that particular time, it was based on the water supply and all this other good stuff. And, but they would come around to each company, check the equipment and see if it was kept up and clean and greased and everything in order. And he would ask questions of the men. And they even had us now. No other station but us. They made us all come in. All shifters and everything, and they stood out there, I bet you, for 4 hours and asked us questions.
Did he give you a tough time the whole thing?
Well, his idea was to make you miss a question.
And if you didn't miss a question, then
if you didn't miss a question, he kept going. He said he was just determined to make us miss a question.
I mean, what if you did miss a question?
Well, then it was all over, you know. And
you would be what? You'd be what?
Well, no, it's just how you had lived up to it to that point. You already had your mark.
Yeah.
But he was just going on until he made us miss a question. So we finally missed a question. And he stood right in front of the same chief to say you couldn't make fun of me out of those Negroes. He stood right in front of him and he told me, he said, I've been on this job for 32 years and I've never seen a company with cleaner equipment and better prepared as firefighters in my whole entire career. He turned red and I never seen him at this station. Not a damn other day until he retired or died, whatever the case may be. Now that was really amazing to me.
And when you got to the fire, and let's say the other company, a white company, arrived,
mm-hmm.
how much trouble would they allow you to get into? I mean, if you were really in bad shape, would they come to help or would they let you just swing?
Well, now, we never ran in that situation. I felt like we ran into a case where, you know, there was a lot of danger. Quite naturally, any time you go out, there's a lot of danger. I remember one time over here at this Atlanta Steelworks. We were on a line down side of the building. That was the time, if you remember correctly, if you've been in the city for any length of time, and when it was burning so hot it was burning telephone poles right alongside the expressway. And we were down to the building. It was galvanized nails and bolts and things and this thing. And it was burning pretty good. And it was made out of this steel. And I was on a loading dock and I had a 2.5-inch line and I had 3 guys behind me. And somebody said, look out. I don't know who said look out. But anyway, all the rest of them bail off and left me. I had the nozzle. That means I can't turn it loose. So they pulled me off with a box and had me beating me between the railroad track, you know. And I can't turn it loose, you know. And there was actually a white guy who actually wanted to save my life.
So in other words, if you were in trouble, the white guy.
I felt like it would.
When I spoke to Chief Haber, he said that on a fire, everybody could get to by race and all that crap. They just work together. Did you get that feeling?
No, I didn't get that feeling. I got a completely different feeling because too many cases where it was just blatant, it was straight out, you know, that we're not going to do anything, we just let you swing, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they would have allowed us to be killed or anything.
You think they would have jumped it at some point?
I think they would have, because actually, with the white guy to save me that time.
But I mean, they were going to let you
I beat for a little while, but he was doing the best he could. Yeah. He had to walk the line down so he could, you know, because see, it has a lot of pressure on me, and I couldn't stop it, and couldn't turn it loose. When I turned loose, it beat me to death. You know, so I'm liable to kill other people too.
He also said that the reason the other companies that were white didn't come to your aid right away is that they wanted to see what the black fireman could do.
About what he was made out of. It could have been that, and then it could have been, like I say, I felt like it started at the top.
Yeah.
By them not really wanting the situation to come to pass, they passed the rule. Because they allowed the drivers and the officers to choose that station with the promise that I'll give you something for working with it for a long run. So I felt like that was giving them the thing. Everybody that wanted to leave 16, that was at 16, that was allowed to do so.
So they were pretty antagonistic then at first. I mean, they were really...
Oh, really? And they wanted you to bring your own food, you know. And, you know, prior to that, they would eat together and everything. Now they want you to bring your own food, you know. And things like that, you know, it's just little things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what makes it up.
They were there.
Do you think the fire architecture for the black community improved once the black firemen?
Well, yeah, I feel like it did because if you go out there and you know on yourself personally that I'm going to do a good job because this is my neighborhood.
Right.
I was raised out right here on Mason Turner, so the people right around here, I knew personally. And I would do them a whole lot better than I would a stranger. I mean, I'm just being only human.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it did.
Do you feel the white firemen, you know, paid less attention to fires in black neighborhoods because of the blacks?
Well, we'll put it this way. The thing was set up and up until I would give around 70, a little before 70, 68, 69, that this starting at your color line and going this way. We really didn't have any equipment. This is two stations that was built after that time.
Okay, in the black man.
Uh-huh. You had this company would answer our territory extending from Northside Drive all the way to the river. And there's only one company that was in between us, and that's 22 that's over there on Bankhead.
Yeah.
If say we was going down Bankhead, well, if there's 201, which would have been 22 when I was there, we had to come all the way to this point. Say you got nice homes out there in Collier Heights there. And they didn't have, number 9 wasn't there. Number 9's over there by where they built the stadium at.
Oh, yeah.
And 38th, the one on Bankhead, just before we get 280, it wasn't there.
So
this company, 23, is over there on Howell Mill.
Yeah.
They had to come in out there to cover that neighborhood. So that's how you had it. That neighborhood was covered.
In other words, 16 is really the first fire station in a black neighborhood then, really.
Yeah.
And before that, there were no fire stations in black neighborhoods.
Not as I know.
And but there were fire stations.
Oh yeah, there was one in what we call Cocoa, if you raised in the city. That's over there, number 6's.
Where is that again?
Number 6's over there on Boulevard.
Oh.
It was
on the other side of town, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there were fire stations in white neighborhoods there, I guess.
Oh yeah, all over. And it was all set up where your best protection was in the white. And it only changed around, so I stay starting around 68.
Okay, so you think that black crime in on the force helped convince the city to build fire stations in black neighborhoods?
Well, at one time, Chief Hamer and some other people that was in what we started a club called Black Brothers Combined.
Yeah, pretty much.
And they went to the chief of the department to really complain
about fire stations.
About, you know, other fire stations being located where we see. At that particular time, we had a national standard saying that the first hand engine is supposed to be to an alarm within 3 minutes' time of calling.
Yeah.
And the first ladder is supposed to be there within 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And there was no way you could say we were going to say, King Grant Drive on Bankhead, that anybody was going to be there within 3 minutes. There's no way. You see what I mean? Now, we were going to Adamville. There was no way we could do it because we would cover up to Martin Luther King. And that station over there on Bankhead would go all the way down over on Bowler Park and all around that.
So 16 was the first in the black neighborhood, then after that there were a few more that came into the black neighborhood.
Well, you got 9s and 38s going this way, put it that way, going this way.
Yeah, eastward.
Yeah, say going west.
Okay, going west.
I would consider some of the nicer black neighborhoods are.
Yeah.
They really just didn't have many. Mm-hmm. And you got 31s out there at the edge. Which is out there off of Heaven Road.
So areas like Crestwood Forest didn't have any station out there? Or Yeah, that's far from there, too.
Yeah. See, so what I'm trying to tell you is it seemed like to me it just wasn't there.
Yeah, they didn't care. I mean, nobody really cared whether it was there.
Nobody ever seen anything about it because nobody never paid it no attention. And by us being in there, and we have our meetings and we just start trying to work on it. Whenever Chief Hamer, where he was president at the time of the club, every time he would have a meeting with Chief and everything, he would bring up the fact. And another thing too is the company that was located where they could get in there had their oldest pieces of equipment. Hardly a new piece of equipment went downtown up to Buckhead.
So you had old pieces of equipment?
When we opened this station,
yeah.
Yes, we did. And we had a 1952 engine.
And the
truck was a 1937. So now does that say anything?
So and then the other black stations up next to yours, the other ones in the black neighborhood, also had the oldest equipment.
Yeah. Well, see, they put equipment that had been refurbished.
Yeah.
In there.
So you got the junk.
We got the junk.
Yeah.
And the newest station going out that way before they built this 17 with 38, and I went in at 38 as a lieutenant, and that was in 72, and we had two old pieces of equipment put out there. Now, I mean, this is a brand new station, just like this one,
yeah.
But it was in 72.
So in other words, when the whites finally built some more fire stations in the black community, they gave you all the old equipment anyway, so you
right.
So in other words, the good stuff went to the white community.
Well, what they call the high risk. Yeah, well, it just looked like we don't really give a shit about out there. You can burn, but we're going to keep the best.
That's my thought, yeah.
It amounted to that.
And before 16 was built, the station was even further away from the black community, I guess.
Right, it was over there on Mayor Street.
Which means, you had to
go even further.
Okay. And that was when there was just lights, pretty much. I mean, this is the first station integrated, right?
Yeah, this is the first station there. We had a blacks in the city of London. Other than they had a black back during the change of the century, used to keep the horses on station one, but he didn't buy any fire. That's what they always tell me. He said, no, you had the first, you know. I said, okay. So I don't know nothing about horses.
It's sort of, you know, it's where I found out in a lot of other things. And all the other city services, police, paving of streets, streetlight, everything, the black community got nothing or the very last of things to give. It's just this.
That's right.
You find it changed pretty much when Ivan Allen came into office. He was supposed to be a friend of the blacks, you know.
Yeah, well, see, one thing, Ivan Allen being one man, the way I always looked at it, him being one man, it was just so much that he could do.
Yeah.
And that's go for any elected official. It's just so much they can do, and you don't get the feeling out of the people, then you really haven't accomplished anything. You know, he could come in there as the biggest liberal in the world, but if everybody still had the same mentality about the thing, it ain't gonna change very much.
You got Chief Williams at that point, right?
Well, when some of the bigger changes come along, I felt like we had Chief Williams, yes. Yeah. Now, he probably had a tooth and nail, too.
What was it?
Well, because he, Jackson was vice mayor at the time.
Right.
Remember? And he really went in there and he said, well, look, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. It just kind of what it amounted to. Chief William fought it for a while, but I worked with Chief William personally. And as time went along, he learned more about us, okay? He got a chance to meet us on a one-to-one basis. And I felt like before he, you know, like his demise, he really had changed.
So
from the time I went to work for him, to the time I went to 38, I felt like he had changed a lot.
So when he first came in, he didn't like black firefighters?
Well, I wouldn't say that he would go out his way to make it look that way, but he just really didn't have anything for them because he had never been vocal with it. It goes, like, anything you don't know about, you don't give a shit for it anyway. Yeah.
1969, I was covering the Chief Hamer's, those complaints to the city. That black firefighters had a lack of black officers, low hiring levels. When they hired, they only filled a black vacancy. Inequality of assignments, beds, office duties, generally poor treatment. This is still by 1969.
Right.
What was happening with all that by then? I mean, this is now, what, 7 years, 6 years after you've been hired?
Right. Well, we had went through the strike situation and everything. And to mention that, we had a strike from the 66.
Right.
And we were 100% on the first strike. Blacks were all, we went out just like they did, you know. And, but still, you still had that stuff going in and going in and going up. And like I say, Jackson was the one that brought about the officer, myself, and I don't know what he is now, but I think he's a deputy now. Bolden was the first Blacks be promoted.
So Vice Mayor Jackson was able to bring up, help bring up some people in the fire department?
Yeah, because he was on that board of fire masters, sitting on it.
That's right. That's right.
And that was where your power was really, that room down there.
Right. So basically though, I got the impression they hired the first 16 Blacks. They said, okay, we've done our duty, that's it, that's all we're going to do for you.
That's right. And then they decided they was going to integrate that station that I tell you about in another black neighborhood.
Yeah.
Sixes was the next.
Yeah.
So they had to hire some, so they moved some guys from this station that they already had trained to Sixes and put the new ones in here. We're more or less a training station.
Okay.
Got to be a training station. And then they got away and said, well, we need some more. So they put one in each other's station.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and see, we had it easy compared to some of them because we had numbers.
Yeah, right.
We had each other. You get one guy on a ship with all white and who's only black, then they caught the devil. They really caught
the devil. Yeah, and that was one white putting a lot of different stations?
Yeah, there was one black in a lot of different stations.
I mean, one black on a
station. Yeah, I think six was first, 11 was next. There's one over there on North Avenue, and then it just sort of spread it out.
So at what point did this change at all in terms of this, lack of promotions, lack of hiring, the whole business?
Now this all come about between that strike date.
Yeah.
In, say, 1970, where they started moving them out.
Okay, so things got better after the strike, right, in terms of them?
They started getting better. But, like I say, that same mentality was still in. And like I said, when you move a man into a situation, you put him in there by himself, and everybody that got a little animosity feeling don't know them. They don't really want to accept you. Them guys really had it hard. Now, them was one of them. Now, I'd hate to have been one of them. I don't know whether I could have took that or not.
the guy was put in one situation.
One on nine or one on seven.
I think this affected the morale in the department, of blacks and whites working together.
Well, it's very surprisingly enough, it didn't really do enough to, say, change it one way or the other. Because, see, the black, they felt like, hey, I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
They had to, otherwise they couldn't have stayed here with some of the things that were done to them. And Dwight felt like, I'm superior, you know. As long as I feel like I got somebody under me, I got it made.
Yeah, it's
so really, you still had a balance there. So I think that was how, even the morale didn't fall off like they said it was going to.
Yeah.
That Dwight was going to feel bad and quit. They didn't.
Did the Whites still back up Black firefighters at all during this time of the strike and all the bitterness about
No, after the strike now, we found that it was a case where you still had some old pockets held over that they wouldn't hang. But they start coming around after the strike.
But you didn't have any problems with the dominantly white fire company showing up and saying, let's let the black fellows go in and take care of it.
That
had died down.
That had died down. You still had, like I said, you had some officers. I put it a lot on the officers that would allow this to go on.
Yeah, sure.
And then you had some that wouldn't. After that point, they got to the point where they said, well, hey, they're going to make it anyway. But we're not doing anything to help ourselves, so let's go in and try to put it out in this country.
You think anything changed when Mayor Jackson became mayor at all?
Well, he really got a good head start. I think it's the biggest change come about when he was elected vice mayor. I think that was when the big change started. But it continued on into that era.
Yeah.
But I say the biggest change come about being.
Okay. But the general feeling really was that integration wasn't moving very fast during the 60s, that it was just...
No, it was
just creeping along.
Right, and you know, you got tokenism going on.
Yeah. How about the formation of the Brothers Combined? Why was that created back in the late 60s?
Well, we felt like we were being unfairly treated and wasn't given the opportunity to become officers on this job,
yeah.
You know. And see, you had in place a promotion board, and you had this training center out here, and they had it summed up to the point where they would give you a test, a quarterly test, and your grades on that was counted against you when you went up for promotion.
Right.
And then you had to go out there also twice a year for yard work, you know, go out there and actually perform the duties.
Yeah.
And they mocking you, so what do you think you're going to make? You know, all you have to do is have one guy there that don't like you. He mocks you. He's going to mock you low as I don't know what. Not that you didn't have, because I felt like, and a lot of other people do too, that we had one of the better companies in the city because we were trained harder than any other company in the city. We were drilled. And, we didn't get low marks.
So make sure you wouldn't be promoted.
Right, so if you did get a chance to take a promotional test, then, because it was 5 years between the time anyway before you could take one anyway. And first we should work on driving equipment.
Yeah.
And we finally got that in. Myself and Chief Hammer and two or three others made drivers.
Yeah.
I didn't start making them, working on the lieutenant's exam.
Yeah.
We got through the hard efforts of Maine Jackson. He finally got some black lieutenants.
This is when he was vice mayor?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was even actually, they put me on, by not being the two blacks, as officers on the body department, they put me on the motion board, and I had some of those antiquated things that they had on that chain. Like, that was 25% out there of your final grade, which was an awful lot when you talk about personal feelings falling into it. Anytime you got the human factor in there, man, you don't trust him with somebody that you don't like.
So somebody could kill you off on your promotion right there.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, that yard grade should never be used against you.
Yeah.
So I got that kicked off first.
What do you mean? It was no use?
No, as a...
As a testing thing?
No, it was a testing thing.
So what you have after that, you had just the written exam and the oral exam? So
yeah, written and oral.
Okay.
And it took me 2 years to do that. And after we got that down, things started, you know, breaking over for us a little bit, and then they filed a suit.
Yeah, right.
And when they filed that suit, that's what opened it up. And that's what you see today.
That's when the promotions, in other
words. Yeah.
So the military, before then, it was very, very hard for a Black to get promoted.
Still. Right, because we kept two Black lieutenants, which was myself and, Deputy Chief Bowden, whatever he is now, I don't know.
This is now,
just changed it.
This is into what year do you think it was still difficult to see for Black to get promoted?
But up until they had the promotion after this, suit was settled.
Okay, so this is 75, maybe?
No, late? He wasn't settled that early.
That early, oh. Maybe in like 79 or something like that. I think it was.
Whenever the Arlington office was made at one time, was it. And now that come in and the door was open. First of all, if you stop and look at it, by that time, the city had hired over 300 and some Blacks from the job.
Right.
And during that time, we had a good number. Because see, we were having Deputy Chief of Atlanta going around to different cities explaining to them how they would get Blacks on the item. Like Buffalo, New York, they had some like about three.
Yeah.
And you know, as far as recruitment is concerned, Washington, D.C., and all of them.
So, but that time, though, you also had a Black mayor, which must have also helped.
That helped. But I don't think that was the contributing factor, other than the fact that they had to file the suit and they had to. They had a consent decree, right?
Yeah.
Saying that they had so many Blacks and so many Blacks.
Okay, so it was the court that really began to push.
The court broke it wide open.
Yeah.
That was it.
Your feeling then, I guess, if it wasn't a federal suit, there wouldn't have been hardly any Blacks promoted at all in the department, I suppose.
Well, it would be just like it would be a hard fight to the top.
Yeah, I mean, they would have, the Whites would have thrown obstacles every way, I guess.
That's right. Every time you moved, they had an obstacle for you.
Yeah. Do you think having the brothers combined as a Black sort of union, it wasn't actually a union, but it was sort of like a union?
Yeah, we named it a social club, but it was union, believe me.
A Black one and a white one, do you think that hurt firefighters when it came time to negotiate for the city about the wages and things like that?
Yep, because they knew they had you separated.
Right, that's what I mean.
And I do believe that. But it would see, our thing was done in defense.
Oh yeah,
You know, we couldn't really worry about that, you know,
not
negotiating with the city. Well, even today they know they got you separated on two fronts. They got you separated on Black and white, and they got you separated on old and young.
Yeah. So, you're still the organization today, right? And you're still brothers combined today.
Oh yeah, we still have it. It's not as active as it was during that time.
Yeah.
Due to the fact that you don't have the things to fight for. Like we did when we had everything, we had to just start at the bottom and fight up, and we started it.
That's interesting.
And since that time, the all over the country now, they have the Black Professional Firefighters associations all over the country.
Yeah, the chief was telling me that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When all this is going on, all the promotion fights. And all the obstacles to Blacks getting promotion, how well did Blacks and Whites work together during that whole time?
I felt like we worked pretty good.
So you let the whole of this just slide when it came time to fire.
Right. I mean, it was mostly, you know, when we first came on, we had the situation where it was all right for you to leave him in there and fight the guy by himself.
Yeah.
And then that sort of used up. And around the station, you had few guys that felt like, hey, I'm better than he is, you know. I want him to know it, you know. And you try to let you know it, you know, in his way. But see, like I said, we had a natural protect at this station because there were so many of us.
Yeah. But how about all the, you had complaints from the Whites that the Blacks were being treated, better these days, you know?
Right after the federal decree came down, and of course they did, you know, or wouldn't you?
I don't know.
They're going to jump up and say that you're going to have just so many of them, and no matter what their qualification was, they told them that was on the qualification.
So that must have caused a lot of friction between Black and White firefighters.
It really didn't. Be surprising. It didn't. Not to me, it didn't. I don't know, you know, because at the time, the first two, myself and Bowden, when we got
movement.
And see, we got kicked from both sides. First of all, the black fellas felt like we could turn the world over.
Yeah.
We were just lieutenants. There wasn't nothing we could do that we wasn't told to do.
Yeah.
So you was getting it from both sides. You're getting it from the top and the bottom. The guys said, why don't y'all do something? And the guys on top said, you better not do nothing.
Right.
You know what? I'm trying to deal. But after that Sith thing came down, you had a representative number of blacks in these different positions. Well, things sort of eased up.
Yeah. Now, there was a promotion freeze for a long time, though.
That helped out when they got ready to make the promotion. Because you had enough to promote so many blacks and so many
blacks. Yeah.
You know, it hurt the department, though. It definitely hurt the department. I feel like the department lost a lot in that.
Lost in terms of?
Well, as far as leadership was concerned.
Oh, yeah, you didn't have any, I guess you were really short on officers for a while, I guess.
We were short on officers. Yeah. At this particular station, we only had two officers to run the whole thing. And we had three ships.
Mm-hmm.
It was myself and Captain Baker.
Is this station mostly black, white, or what is it?
No, I don't think the ratio is nowhere near like it was.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a mix now.
There's a mix.
Yeah.
Most of these stations are now.
Yeah.
So they do try to keep so many blacks and so many whites, but if possible.
Station by station?
Yeah.
They do?
Yeah.
At different jobs and, you know.
Yeah, well, it just fell naturally, I believe, on that. But they still have what they call quarters, I say. Say, well, we got, because what they'll do is you get ready to ask for a transfer.
Yeah.
And they'll say, well, there's no black positions open. Say, well, I'm a fireman, I'm not a black.
Still say in terms of black and white when they are. The promotions too, still in terms of black and white?
Last promotion was not given on that, on those percentages.
No.
See, this only lasts for 3 years. I think it decreed last for 3 years. And after that, you go for yourself.
Last question, how did they pick the first 16 black firemen? What was the, you know?
It was a hard process. I think it's something like about maybe 300 to 400 black people applied.
Oh really, that many?
Yeah. And I said 200 and some of them went to the physical.
Yeah.
And out of that, they got 35 go to school. And out of that, we got 16 families.
Okay. Judge Amy said a lot of the ones who applied, a lot of the blacks who applied, had gone to college.
Right.
And they were coming into firehouses where the whites could hardly read and write.
Right.
So, I mean, you people were really a lot more qualified educationally, and yet you were being held back in terms of those exams.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's how that went.
Yeah. So in other words, when the promotions really were broken loose from this, from keeping blacks down, you naturally came to the top.
Right.
Because you were more educated in the first place.
Right.
Yeah.
And providing you could keep his thing out of the till, because you got to, see,
yeah.
Remember you had that promotion board sitting down there.
Because
I was on that board, and I told him the only way I would be on the board is one man, one vote.
Yeah, sure.
And when the gig was over, they had this one guy to come in. And he answered every question we asked him wrong. And the makeup of that chief, Williams, said, that's a good Christian man, now he's a good man. You know, and I said, but chief, what did that guy do? He answered the question wrong. I said, I'm going to mock him off myself. Everybody else on the board mocked him up. I mocked him off because that was what they said to me when I went on there. Okay, if he answers the question, he gets so much. If he don't answer the question, he gets so much, and that's what he got, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought that was awful. And slowly people start coming around. We had a lady from personnel, we had a captain on the board, a lieutenant, and two chiefs, and director of personnel. The lady from personnel, she didn't know nothing about firefighting. The director didn't know anything about firefighting, and the lieutenant and the captain was supposed to have been free prior to the time I went on the board, because I felt like this, I didn't want to be on the board nowhere. Put me off. But I'm not going to sit up here and let you tell me he's a good Christian man just because if he didn't answer the question, that's exactly what he got marked as. But see, for so long I asked for fairness, and it wouldn't be within my nature to go against that.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Right, right.
So T. William, he was talking to me, I was his driver at the time. And when he was going home one afternoon, he said, "You really believe in what you do, don't you?" I said, "I believe wholeheartedly, Chief." I said, "Because see, you hadn't been there on the bottom. I've been on the bottom. I know how it feels to go out there and bust your brains out and try to make a good scope. Some guy coming here because he knows you personally, get above it." And I said, "That's just not fair to me."
This is not the same boy that Jackson was on, Major Jackson. This was
No, this was the, what they call it, promotional boat.
And he was on the fire.
He was board of fire masters.
And they control where stations are put. And
they controlled everything as far as fire department was concerned.
They didn't control promotions, did they?
At the time, yes.
They did say that. But that was changed later on.
You see, they were not commissioners, but what it was, the aldermen.
Yeah.
He was made up of aldermen.
Oh, okay.
So they controlled.
They control promotions and
everything.
And that changed later on, then, I guess. Okay. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's a weird thing.
It's quite a story. I mean, you really were a pioneer back then. There's no doubt about it.
You had to be pretty thick-skinned, too.
I'm talking also to some of the first black police fires. And same deal. Same thing you went through.
Yeah,
all the way down the line.
They couldn't even arrest whites at all.
I know. And...